much to my own drum, march, march to my own drum. Hey, hey, I'm an army of one.
Representative Melissa Hortman was elected in 2004 to the Minnesota House, and she is from Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. She currently serves as the Speaker of the House. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So the 2020 Minnesota legislative session had a lot to deal with. You expected a bonding bill. You expected education, tax bills. You probably didn't expect a worldwide pandemic and the killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police, so that police reform became a big issue. There have been two special sessions so far this summer. But first of all, just checking in, how are things going for you in the wake of everything going on in the world?
Well, I think we're all starting to get used to the pandemic a little bit. I hate to say that it's become routine, but I would say in early March when this first hit, most of us probably expected we'd be home from work for a couple of weeks and then we'd go back and things would kind of return to normal. And instead, I think we're getting a little bit adapted to a new normal.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the special sessions that have already happened and then talk about if you think that there will be another one coming up. Tell us how you felt about it as a leader in the Minnesota House, the first and second special sessions, and how they turned out.
Well, it's been a really difficult time for our state between the pandemic and the killing of George Floyd and the significant civil unrest. I don't think that our state has dealt with a set of facts that's been so hard since probably 1968, where you had the backdrop of the Vietnam War and you had significant racial unrest. This pandemic is like a world war with the disruption and the deaths, honestly, worldwide. So it's been a really intense time to be in leadership, really heavy burden on all of us because we're so concerned with keeping Minnesotans safe, first of all, and then making sure we have an economic recovery plan. And then with the significant civil unrest, having a real reckoning that there still is a lot of racism and it still has an impact on different aspects of our lives. And we have to start seriously addressing that in all sorts of ways, not just public safety, but education, healthcare, housing, the job, the workplace. So definitely a heavy workload, but I think people are rising to the occasion and we got some really good things done.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about police reform. I imagine compromise is one of the biggest words that you need as a leader. How do you feel about how police reform was addressed in the second special session?
I'm really proud of the bill that we came together around on a bipartisan basis. And we worked with members of the community who, many of whom had felt that they had experienced incidents of police brutality. And we also worked with professionals in law enforcement who are really concerned about bad actors in their profession giving the good actors a bad name. So we worked together. We agreed to ban the warrior style training, which regards the people who are policed as the prey and the police as hunters. And that's not a type of training we want our police officers to go through. We banned chokeholds, required that police officers intervene if one of their colleagues is doing something inappropriate, and a really big change in the use of force standard. So now after the fact, when we're reviewing an incident, it's not, was that particular police officer frightened in that situation? It's, would a reasonable officer have used that kind of force in that situation? And so it has to be reasonable. That's a pretty big change. So I think it's a bold proposal. It's the most significant reform that's occurred nationwide. And it's appropriate that that happened here in Minnesota, that we had a big reform package.
So the governor is the one that calls special sessions, is that right?
That's right. And under the emergency, he has to call them once every 30 days to give the legislature a chance to revoke his emergency powers.
Okay. So there will be another one? Do you know that yet?
Yes, there is highly likely to be one on August 12th, and there is highly likely to be another one around September 12th. We know in August, the Democrats in the Minnesota House, we are sticking with the plan to allow the governor to keep using his emergency powers. And we expect that the Republicans in the Senate will vote to take it away. But we don't think there'll be a lot more happening in the August session. And the reason is the state of Minnesota is currently selling bonds on the market. These are previously authorized bonds for big construction projects. And when we go to market and sell our bonds, we have to sit tight on the state finances for a period of time before the bond sales and after the bond sales. So I would expect September would be a more eventful special session.
Will you clarify about the executive powers? It's just the House that makes a decision on whether the governor will keep those executive powers. Is that right?
It's the House and the Senate. Okay. So in order to revoke them, both the House and the Senate would have to vote to take them away. And there's an existing law that we passed back in the 1950s, I think, when there was concern about nuclear war and what happens to the continuity of government in that kind of a situation. And just like in order for the legislature to make a law, you have to have a bill succeed in the House and the Senate. The only way the legislature truly has legal impact is to work together. And the same is true with the emergency powers. In order to revoke the governor's emergency powers, both the House and the Senate would have to vote to revoke them. And right now, we have a Senate who would like to take those emergency powers away, and a House that says, no, we want the governor to continue to have those powers. And so when we're divided, he gets to continue to have the powers.
Well, I think people listening or those of us not involved in this day by day, we would assume that you as the House Majority Leader, you're a DFLer, so is the governor, that of course you would be for his executive powers. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about, would there ever be a time where you think he doesn't need them anymore? And how do you think it's impacted how this peacetime emergency has gone in Minnesota?
Yeah, well, 49 of the 50 governors in the United States currently still have their emergency powers. And the president of the United States is currently also operating under a state of national emergency. So the emergency is present throughout the country from the president all the way down. And I think what we in the House would be looking at is, when do we think that this virus is done posing a significant threat to Minnesotans? Unfortunately, our cases are rising, and we're not yet like Arizona or Florida or Texas with those really steep rises, and we don't foresee our hospital beds being overrun. But the problem with the virus is it's an exponential increase. So when it starts ramping up, it can go from bad to very bad extremely quickly. And the governor has to, in our view in the House, the governor has to have these emergency powers to act quickly to deal with things we can't anticipate. Like, remember back in the spring, we had an outbreak at the pork processing plants, and suddenly the pork producers in Minnesota had nowhere to bring their pigs. And the governor had to buy a $15 million piece of equipment to help deal with excess pork that had been produced in Minnesota that couldn't go to processing plants. The legislature just doesn't move that fast to go buy a $15 million piece of equipment in one day and solve a problem. And so we need the governor to have these powers just in case of things like that popping up.
You know, we had a chance to have the governor join us last week for the statewide conversation, and he was talking directly to this as well, that he was the one that wanted a check on what he was doing every 30 days. So that didn't have to be there, but he wanted to make sure that he took a conservative approach to handling a peacetime emergency. Is that right? Am I getting that right?
Yep. The statute is a little bit unclear, and we haven't really used it much since the legislature passed it in the 1950s, and then whoever was the governor in the 1950s signed it into law. We've never had a peacetime emergency that has lasted this long. And so when you look at the statute, there's a couple different ways to read it, and the governor did pick the way to read it to give the legislature the most power.
We're talking with Minnesota DFL House Speaker Melissa Hortman on KEXE, KBXE. Let's talk about the 2020 edition of the Minnesota Values Project. It's been announced by the Democrats. What is it?
Well, after the 2016 election, when Minnesota Democrats didn't do so well, we decided to start from scratch and go to Minnesotans and say, hey, we want to know what's important to you and what you want us fighting for at the state capitol. I think typically you hear from political candidates, they come on out and they say, hey, I have all these great ideas, let me tell you about them. Aren't they awesome? Don't you want to vote for me? And we turned that upside down and we said, no, what we want to do is we want to really have an intensive conversation with Minnesotans and find out what's on your mind and bring that to the Capitol. I think every political party kind of needs to hit refresh at a certain point and go out and say, hey, we think we know that we're representing the people, but let's make sure. Let's ask them if the direction we're going is the right direction. And so we scrapped everything and we asked Minnesotans what they wanted us to work on. And what Minnesotans said was really remarkable because it was so consistent across geography. Was Minnesotans care about their own families and they want their own families to succeed and be healthy, but they also really care about neighbors. And, you know, I guess it shouldn't have surprised me so much because it's fundamental to all of the faith traditions that we have in Minnesota, this concern for neighbor. But Minnesotans want a great education for their own kids. They want it for everybody else's children as well. They want strong health care that they can count on, but they want their neighbors to have that too. And one of the most important things is to have a job that if you get sick, you can take time off, but you still have that job. So we found really strong support for things like paid family medical leave across the state.
When it comes to, I hate saying a silver lining to the pandemic because it's not, you know, we would all choose something different than to be living in a pandemic, but it really gave a spotlight to the inequalities in Minnesota when it comes to economy and when it comes to race. Was that something that you found from people in putting together this year's Minnesota Values Project?
You know, definitely. I would say the pandemic shined a light on the racial disparities in Minnesota because there just seems to be no excuse for the fact that COVID-19 is hitting communities of color more significantly and that they're having worse health outcomes. It doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem right. And then when George Floyd was killed and we had the significant civil unrest, we had to really reckon with there's been a long period of racial disparity in Minnesota. And it's not just in health. It's in education, housing statistics, rates of pay, levels of employment. And at a certain point, we can't just say, oh, that's terrible. That's bad. We have to be very aggressive about doing something to fix it.
Before we go, I'm wondering a little bit about how COVID-19 and this crisis has affected how you look at being a leader in the legislature. Are there things that you've learned that you can take forward once we move through this?
Well, I think for me, it's been strange to have to worry so much about people's physical health and well-being. So my very first concern when we decided to take a little hiatus in March was to make sure all of the employees of the Minnesota House of Representatives were safe and all the members were safe. And then the second thing was, how do we have a functioning government in a way where we can preserve everybody's health and safety? So I never anticipated as a leader that as we worked on bills and policies at the state capitol, that I'd be so directly and personally responsible for keeping our team healthy. And I think probably lots of people across Minnesota, you know, we've taken our health for granted, and this virus has really made us have to think hard about how to stay healthy.
That's Minnesota DFL House Speaker Melissa Hortman. We sure appreciate your time today.
Thanks for the conversation.